Good evening. I'd like to call to order the Thursday, September 16th, 2010 regular Planning Commission meeting. First item on the agenda is call to order. Accomplished. Next item is roll call.
Commissioner Moss.
Here.
Commissioner Kaye.
Here.
Commissioner Esselman.
Here.
Commissioner Broiley.
Here.
Commissioner Behrens.
Here.
Vice Chair Perkowski.
Here.
Chair Wagner.
Here. Next item on the agenda is the approval of the agenda. Does anyone have any? Great. Next item is number four, director's comments.
So I'm sitting in for Mr. Tovar tonight, and we have no comments.
All right. Next item is the approval of minutes. We have two sections to approve. We have the August 19th dinner meeting and then the regular meeting. Do we have any, aside from the formatting, where it looks like the pages were justified?
Don't know what happened.
It's like reading an iambic pentameter or something.
What?
It's like reading an iambic pentameter. Commissioner Kaye?
Yeah, on page 20 of the packet, that's page 12 of the regular meeting notes. Right at the top, just following the all caps where it says Vice Chair Perkowski seconded the motion, the sentence that follows doesn't really capture, I think, the meaning or what I said exactly. Give me just a second. I had a rewording of this, but it doesn't. I jotted it somewhere else.
Maybe we can just ask Jessica to go back and listen.
Well, and this is a really straightforward issue in that this was one of the comprehensive plan amendment that basically would change the reading of LU 43 regarding Faircrest campus. And it says that Commissioner Kaye said it has been clearly demonstrated that the shift of the property is being taken care of. I'm not, I hope I didn't say something that incoherent. What I intended was that that transfer of the property to become part of the public health lab portion was clearly, had been addressed clearly in the language. So however you want to restate that, but I don't think somebody reading this in the future would have any idea what that means. So can you find something for that? Yeah, I mean, this was really straightforward thing. We were just, if you recall, the issue was that there was a few acres that were being kind of transferred into the public health lab
designation
mm-hmm. from whatever it was prior to that. And that's what we're trying to capture. So I just wanted to get that clarified. It just didn't make sense the way it's written. That makes sense. Thanks.
Good catch.
Just a couple of grammar things. Page 11, under newborn screening, it said there are 25 different tests that are genetically transmitted to newborn children. I think it's tests for conditions or...
Where are you at?
I'm on page 11 under the newborn screening laboratory, second sentence. It says there are 25 different tests that are genetically transmitted to newborn children. I don't think they transmit the tests.
Okay.
So I just thought if you put for conditions, it's a little clearer. It kind of sounded like they were doing things with newborns there at the lab, and I don't believe that's what they're doing. They're testing blood from the newborns. So I think that's why I said if there are 25 different tests for conditions that are genetically transmitted, it just mm-hmm. seemed like it made more sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that it? Or do you have another one? Okay. All right. And we'll approve those as amended. The next item on the agenda is a general public comment. We have a legislative hearing right after this, so anyone who'd like to speak on the legislative public hearing will be given an opportunity to do so once that hearing has been opened. So this time would be for anyone who'd like to speak on any other topic aside from the public hearing. And I've got one person currently signed up, Lathan Wayne. If you can come forward, state your name and city of residence. Thank you.
Good evening, Lathan Wayne, Shoreline. I'm on the board of directors for Northwest Center, and the board of directors of Northwest Center was wondering if they could build a facility for people with disabilities here in the city of Shoreline, and if that's okay. And the board was wondering if they could have a letter in writing regarding the process, and I'll take it to the board, back to the board, and for their approval. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wayne. I'd also like to acknowledge that we have Mayor McGlashan with us this evening. Thank you for joining us. And moving on into item number 7, which is a public hearing, I have a script to read. If it sounds like I'm reading it, it's because I am. So it's a type L action, which is a legislative public hearing. Tonight's public hearing is on the proposed amendments to the development code. The purpose of the hearing is to obtain public testimony and for the commission to develop a recommendation to forward to city council. I would like to remind everyone that we're engaged in the public's business and an appropriate level of decorum should be maintained at all times. All comments should be directed through the chair. Only one person will have the floor at a time. Applauding, booing, or disruption of the process will not be tolerated. If you wish to speak on the proposal, please sign up on the yellow sheet located at the table near the door. Comments are limited to 2 minutes per person testifying or 5 minutes for someone representing a recognized organization. If you're representing an organization, please let us know when you come up, and that will be then recorded as the official position of the organization. When I call your name, please come to the microphone, state your name and city of residence for the record. So the process will be that the city staff will present their report. The commission will be given an opportunity to ask for some clarifying questions. Individuals will be given an opportunity to speak on the proposed amendments. After the testimony has been received, the commission will begin deliberation and may ask questions of the staff or of individuals who testified. And then we'll vote and close the public hearing. I now wish to open the public hearing. And before we move too far along, I'd like to also note that we received a volume of things via email, and we have a desk packet available. So there were a couple, at least one commissioner who had not had an opportunity to read all the emails that came in today. So at some point, we'll need to take a little break to make sure that we have an opportunity to look at that. So I don't know if you want to present the staff report, and maybe you'll even address some of the questions that were in there or address.
I think that's what we'd prefer to do, to give us the staff presentation. Probably after the staff presentation, you may want to take your 5 or 10 minutes to go through the emails and other information, so that when the public comments, they might want to refer to certain pieces of it, and you will have at least a nodding acquaintance with it.
Okay.
Okay. So these are proposed amendments to the development code. You've had study sessions on these, but first thing we want to make very clear is that some of the items of the study session are not up tonight. They have been put off for another time. So the items that you're going to be discussing tonight for the public hearing are the following. There's 5 of them. Modifying Chapter 2030, which deals with certain aspects of CEPA, the State Environmental Policy Act, specifically. One, removing the requirement for CEPA review of categorically exempt projects within only those within critical areas. And the second, amending the appeal process only for Type C quasi-judicial actions. The second major item is a rewrite of Chapter 2070, which is a lot of engineering guidelines. This would do 2 things: remove the technical standards from Chapter 2070 of the development code, and ultimately put them in the engineering development guide. And secondly, modify the provisions for single-family frontage improvements. The third major item is to add a section to the development code that formalizes a process. It tells us how to create an annual docket for comprehensive plan amendments for council review. So Jeff is here, and Flannery is here as well, and they will be going through most of the development code discussion. I will be following up very quickly with the comprehensive plan amendment process, since that's kind of more in my bailiwick. And then, again, we would suggest that perhaps you take a recess for 5 or 10 minutes to go through the emails and such.
Great.
Good evening. As Steve said, we've been through several public hearings and study sessions on these items. And public notice was provided in the Seattle Times, Planning Commission webpage, on the Development Code webpage. Also, notices were submitted to Department of Ecology and through the Department of Commerce as required by Department of Commerce rules. The first item I'd like to go over in your packet is the amendment to the environmental procedures with regards to the exemptions, the elimination of exemptions for critical areas. Currently, the code provides that environmental review is required for any proposal that's conducted within a critical area or critical area buffer. And some background of where that provision came from. That provision came out of the State Environmental Policy Act. Originally, it was referred to as environmentally sensitive areas prior to any cities or counties actually having critical area ordinances. As time has gone by, that term has been changed to critical area ordinances, and it's a permissive section in the State Environmental Policy Act. It actually says cities and counties may incorporate these. But as you know, the city has gone through GMA and incorporated into our regulations our critical area ordinances, and those critical area ordinances have been adopted under the provisions of GMA that require us to use best available science. So we feel that we've matured to a point as a city where that tool doesn't provide us any more than we're getting out of our critical area ordinance. In fact, it's causing a conflict in the basic provisions of our orders. We have this circular effect that happens when we start evaluating proposals. So this only would eliminate environmental review on those items that are categorically exempt. It doesn't eliminate the review of those items that rise above the thresholds more than four single-family dwelling units as it currently exists, more than 4,000 square feet of new commercial buildings, clearing and grading over 500 cubic yards, excuse me. And it does not eliminate permit provisions for those activities that are conducted in and around critical areas. Those still are subject to review under our current standards. And the one thing that we have happening quite often with critical areas in CEPA review is there's a tendency to try and reevaluate your ordinances with this environmental review, because it's a very narrow environmental review. It's only on the critical area impacts. It's not on the structure itself, the height, the color, the look, the feel. It's only on its impact on the critical areas. So there's a tendency to look at deficiencies in the critical area ordinance. We propose if there's a discrepancy or a weakness in our ordinance, we come back and evaluate the ordinance and not use CEPA to come back and look at those. So on that, I'm going to have Flannery discuss a little bit about the appeals.
Okay. So you're familiar with this. We've been here a couple times on the appeals. And what you'll see here is there's basically two changes. The first is the elimination of administrative CEPA appeals for type C actions. And you'll see that on page 38 under A5. For type L or type C, no administrative appeal of DNS is permitted. The other thing that's pretty non-controversial is we're adding 7 extra days for an appeal if the optional DNS process is used for type A or type B. And that's under section 4A4. So that's just an overview kind of what these changes are. Everything else is intended to be just a consolidation, because the chapter or the section started to get really long, and we decided, well, we could really make this more concise. So those are the only two changes that were intended. And if we recall back to when this issue started, we saw a conflict between this appeal section and the RCW. So currently how the appeal section is worded is allows the, and how our type A, type B, type C work, is that it allows for the underlying open record hearing on the permit to be heard by the Planning Commission for type C for most type Cs. I mean, I know that there's a temporary ordinance in place where the hearing examiner is hearing some of those, but this is how the codes are written currently. So you hear the type C open record hearing for the permit, but for the SEPA appeal, administrative appeal, the hearing examiner is supposed to hear those. So you have that split of authority. And the RCW requires that one body hear that and it be in a consolidated hearing. So we're trying to fix that. And let's see here. I don't know. Okay, so the other thing is, as you know, we're not required to have an administrative SEPA appeal. It can, the city can choose to offer it or not, and that's in state law. So here we're saying administrative SEPA appeals are still provided for type A. They're still provided for type B, but this would eliminate them altogether for type C actions. Other options that are available, so that's the option that's proposed by staff, no type C appeals. Other options are that you could transfer all type C review authority. So for the underlying permit, we're talking about master plans, rezones. What other type C actions are there?
Conditional use permits.
So everything would transfer to the hearing examiner, including the SEPA appeal, obviously, because she hears the SEPA appeal. So all those actions transfer to the hearing examiner. Or another option, which the city attorney's office does not recommend, is that the Planning Commission retain all type C permit review and hear all SEPA appeals. And then the third option, which we also don't recommend, is that the you still hear the type C permits or the hearing examiner. You have a split right now, like I said. They're hearing, I think, street vacations and some others. But the third option would be for that split to still occur, but then the city council hears the SEPA appeals. So those are three options. Again, the one proposed by staff is elimination of type C administrative SEPA appeals altogether. The reason that we don't recommend Planning Commission or the city council to hear SEPA appeals is because they're very litigious. I mean, you've got attorneys involved. You're going to have briefings filed, cross-examination, testimony. In the end, there has to be a written opinion. And typically what you'll see is if that's appealed to court, one of the major reasons they're remanded is procedural issues. So hearing examiners are really familiar on how to hold appeals. They know how to do it. They understand the testimony. They understand, like, what's allowed, what isn't, how to limit the issues. And I think, you know, other bodies aren't as familiar with how to run an appeal. So that's why, in not just city attorney's office, but our insurance authority does not recommend that SEPA appeals be heard by bodies such as yourself. So that's all I have for that.
Okay, following up on Flannery's comments, one of the things that we looked at this, again, is the mechanisms that we can employ that fit our permitting processes and our structure of government. And during the study session, we had a question I think Commissioner Yanni asked for, some comparisons back from other jurisdictions, and we actually looked at a number of local jurisdictions around our area. And indeed, as Commissioner noted, that there's a lot of different ways that different cities do this. And they do it for a number of reasons. One is they structure their permits. We all structure them differently. We call them type A, type B, type C. Another jurisdiction may call them process one, process two, process three. And in each one of those buckets have a different types of permits that they'll have. And then they will assign those to different hearing bodies, and then in conjunction with that, grant those hearing bodies different authorities. So trying to draw a straight line comparison became very difficult. So we looked through all those and found that where we were at fits our permitting area. And one of the reasons is hearing examiner and planning commission do conduct a hearing. They conduct a hearing that's open. Any SEPA evaluation, whether it is a DNS, declaration of non-significance, or mitigated declaration of non-significance issued by the director, is still brought to the planning commission in its entirety for consideration as part of the record. testimony can be taken at that time on all those issues. So they can build a complete record through your hearing process or hearing examiner's hearing process that goes to council for consideration. But it's not until after the council actually issues a decision on that or approves a permit is the record complete. The conditions are all established at that point, and they're clear and become very clear if there is an appeal. And that appeal then would go to Superior Court. Appealing to the commissioner hearing examiner, at that appeal point, even though the director may have issued a decision, a SEPA decision on that, the conditions are only as good as the information received to that point. So in other words, mitigations may be identified, but the commission or the hearing examiner may identify through public testimony additional mitigations are required to condition the proposal, and those then could be added without having to go through appeal process. So for one, we thought it was a little bit redundant that in the way our processes are structured, that and another thing is it depends on what you're trying to accomplish with our public hearing process and what you're trying to accomplish with an appeal. Is an appeal a mechanism to look at a failure in the procedure or the decision-making process, or is it a mechanism to, for sake of a better word, delay a project? If it's truly a mechanism to look at failures in the process should complete. The conditions should be established. It should be a full record that the commission has an opportunity or the hearing examiner has an opportunity to create. So that's why we recommend that the appeals, just only on Type C actions, be judicial and not administrative. And it does not eliminate, as Flannery said, any of the administrative appeal processes for Type A and B permits, which Type B permits are short subdivisions and some of our other ministerial permits, Type A building permits, clearing grading permits. All the day-to-day permits, this is a lot of public involvement in, are still available for administrative appeal to the hearing examiner. So when you get those higher level permits, a lot of complex issues, that we recommend going and complete the record, let council make a decision, and go on to a judicial appeal. Flannery, did you have anything else to add?
No.
The next item are the amendments to the engineering standards. In the proposal to amend the engineering standards has two major components to it. One is from time to time we evaluate how we're doing business and what our technical expertise is and what technical manuals we use. In the engineering chapter of the development code, there are actual technical standards that were in place in there primarily with regards to access management that had no relationship or point in time or point to a particular engineering manual that we could identify. So we couldn't go back to those engineering manuals to see if they had been amended or changed. They were just locked in place in the development code, and they seemed to be quite out of context with the rest of the development code. Most of those provisions in there are provisions that are affected, you know, through public works and technical road design and engineering. So we recommend that we remove those technical standards out. They are going in our engineering development guide to go along with all the technical manuals we've adopted. We've adopted WashDOT Highway Design Manual. We've got the MUTC, which is a standard design manual for roads. We have about 30 manuals that are used both by Public Works Department and through our development review in developing proposals. And the idea behind that is we put all the technical information in one manual that engineers, designers, architects can use to formulate projects. But when we did that, the chapter became very fragmented. So we opted just to reformat and restructure and rewrite some of the provisions of the chapter so that they made sense in a flow. And there are some minor language changes and tweaks in the language. The major item that was changed was the recommended to remove the frontage requirements for individual single-family dwelling units and additions and alterations to single-family dwelling units. Currently in the development code, there's a requirement if you exceed 50% of the assessed value of the property and structures requirement to construct frontage improvements on single-family dwellings. And we had a permit come to our attention that caused us to evaluate this. And in conjunction with some of the transportation master planning and our impact fees, that if you've been following council meetings, there's been some presentations on that, we decided to take a look at that provision. And what we found is, one, is that we were asking people to do system improvements under a permit that wasn't generating an impact. The frontage improvements weren't, the need for frontage improvements weren't caused by a remodel to the house. They weren't caused by the replacement of a house or actually the construction of one unit. They were caused by a need to get that for a system. So there's some specific court cases that exist that say you need to have that nexus of impact to development. Second, we were asking for people to dedicate right-of-way to implement those frontage improvements, and we weren't paying for that. That's something we have to do, and the city is not in a position where they need to go out and acquire right-of-way or want to particularly. And in light of the up-and-coming transportation impact fees that are going to be coming forward for council consideration in the future, and in light of the situation where we couldn't draw a nexus to the requirement, we're recommending removing that. It does not eliminate frontage improvements for other types of development, commercial, multifamily, subdivisions, short plats, anything that increases the impact on a road system. We will continue to ask for frontage improvements and get those accordingly. Notice it eliminate our ability to ask for improvements to the right-of-way to correct a safety issue that may exist when a new house or a remodel takes place. And like I said, the rest of the amendments in the chapter, I can walk through those if the chair likes. They're fairly extensive. I included in your packet is the is the current chapter table of contents and what happened to all the various sections, and then the new language is included in there.
I don't have a need for you specifically. Is anyone else interested in having that be? Okay, well, I think we can move on.
Whoa, okay, I guess I'm next. So as I said, I'm going to be talking about the amendment to Section 203340, which describes the annual CPA docketing process. The city is 15 years old, and there's never been a formalized process, and what that tends to mean is that year to year it changes somewhat. Never a lot, but some years the basically, I think it's because of staff resources. Staff basically can set what the rules are. In some years, the rules have been you have to apply for comprehensive plan amendment by the end of December. Other years, by the end of January. And basically, staff thought it was time to write a section to make this formalized. What the process should be. When I started asking around, it turned out someone in the year 2000 had written this already. It was very unclear why it had never been brought forward, but now's your chance. So basically what it says is that amendment proposals will be accepted throughout the year, but the last day for submitting proposals is the last business day in December. It says at least 3 weeks prior to the closing date, There will be public dissemination of the fact there is a deadline. This will be, at a minimum, advertised in the newspaper and available on the city's website. When the member proposals come in, that is to say, after the end of December, the proposals themselves will be posted on the city's website. The draft docket then will be brought to the Planning Commission for your review, and you will be asked to forward a recommendation to Council. The Council will establish the final docket after the Council. Let me back up a little bit. The actual draft docket itself will be advertised in the paper, so people can comment on that to council if they like. The council will establish the final docket. And then after that, there'll be, as we have done in the past, analysis and recommendation coming back to you with proposals one by one. And those will all be submitted together to council near the end of the year for council's adoption. So basically, it's what we've been doing. It just formalizes the process. And that's what this amendment's all about.
And then finally, there's some minor administrative amendments that go along with proposed SEPA appeal amendments and engineering chapter amendments that if those are approved, there's some minor amendments that need to be made in the tables and text. Following along the discussion on the emails and public comments we received, some of the packet is comments brought forward from previous study sessions and public hearings. Then we received some other comments late today. One issue was regarding the permitting process, not really germane to the discussion tonight with regards to thresholds, but it's germane to the discussion on process and how we implement the regulations. And there was a question with regards to a specific project over on 5th and 15th, a church that has done a major expansion over the years. And the question was, what process did they go through? And our records indicate that there was a conditional use permit process they went through in 1999 and 2000, which was a public process. The comments taken on that, a conditional use permit was developed, a SEPA review process, an actual mitigated determination of significance was issued that allowed the project to go forward. So just to clarify the questions that were asked in that letter, thought we'd bring them forward today, tonight, so that you had the information as well as the party inquiring.
Okay, as Jeff noted, there are a number of items that that we would like to add as exhibits, because although they're in your desk packet, we want to formally adopt them into the record. So it's been, if it's okay with the chair, I will read them out and give them their exhibit number and just the title. Okay,
sounds great.
So the first item is the that is exhibit number 5, the minutes from the 5/6/10 Planning Commission meeting. Exhibit number 6, minutes from 6/17/10 Planning Commission meeting. Exhibit number 7, minutes from 7/15/10 Planning Commission meeting. Exhibit number 8, a comment period from Ms. DePeso submitted at the 6/17 Planning Commission meeting. Exhibit number 9, comment letters from the 5/6/10 public hearing desk packet. Exhibit number 10, an email chain between Ms. Phelps and Mr. Tovar dated 7/12. Exhibit 11, an email from Mr. Marinek dated 7/12. Number 12, a comment letter from Mr. Scully dated 7/12. Number 13, an email from Ms. Roth dated 7/13. Exhibit number 14, email from Ms. Kellogg dated 9/14. Exhibit 15, email from Ms. Kellogg dated 9/14. Exhibit 16, email it's a letter that was transmitted by email from Ms. Kellogg dated 9/14. Exhibit 17, email from Ms. Kellogg dated 9/16. Exhibit number 18, also by email, a letter from Ms. Kellogg dated 9/16. And just when we were ready to close shop, we received by email a comment letter from Mr. Scully, also dated 9/16. So those are the additions to the record. I just wanted to add that we received a number of suggestions about improving public outreach, particularly dealing with advertising public hearings. To recap, we have met the letter and spirit of the law in this case, as we do most of the time, I think, in that we advertise in the Seattle Times, we send information to the state, we have information on our website on the Planning Commission page, and we send email links to an email list numbering more than 200 people. However, one of the suggestions we thought deserves some extra thought and some work on our part, and that is actually to put on our website on the front page, the first page you get to if you type in City of Shoreline, a note saying that there's going to be a public hearing. That would be for either or both Planning Commission and Council. And so Jessica and I talked about this, and she's talking to other folks. We're not sure we can make it work, but we think it's a really good idea, and we're going to try to make it work. So I think with that, we're open to some clarifying questions, and then it'll be up to the chair to decide how long you think you want to take to actually go through the list of exhibits.
Does anyone have any clarifying questions first, or do we want to go to the list of exhibits before we do that? Commissioner Behrens?
It seems to me in reviewing these...
Mike.
I'm sorry. It seems to me in reviewing the amendments that have been submitted that the majority of these comments, the letters, address the categorical exemption, the change that was initially proposed, that has apparently been dropped. We're no longer even considering that.
That's not a subject of tonight's hearing. That's correct.
So that is where my question lies. How necessary is it for us to review a bunch of information that is basically going to have no effect on what we're considering? I don't want to in any way make light of the information that's in the file. The people have taken the time to comment, but the majority of those comments are addressed to a portion of an amendment that's not even in front of us for consideration. That's my clarifying question.
I guess I can't respond directly at what you should do with that information specifically, but what I would like to turn on its side a little bit and suggest that at the retreat we have a little discussion about what you think would be appropriate to be in your packet when you come to legislative public hearings, if it's appropriate to put all the previous correspondence in or only that correspondence which directly relates, or none of it. So I guess that's the quick off the top of my head response.
And I would say that there's a number that were related also specifically to the SEPA appeal process. So I think they're kind of interwoven and all things SEPA seem to have.
It's a difficult question because, the bulk of the information before this meeting and even some of it that we see today talked about items that are not that you're not reviewing tonight.
Well, if we don't have any other clarifying questions, I don't know if we want 15 minutes. Is that too much or enough? We've got so the thing that the first section of the meeting minutes that were part of the desk packet, those should be ones that we wouldn't have to read in detail because we're familiar with those. So then it would be the new ones so from item number 10 forward. And some of those people may have already read, so we're talking 30 pages, 15 minutes? Okay. It's 7:40, so let's take a 15-minute recess. You have to bang me gavel. I'll bang the gavel while Jessica goes and turns off the...